You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's so sad, but it is the end of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. We're doing our draft wrap-up edition. I'm Chris McPherson, and welcome first and foremost. We're going to recap what the Eagles did during the 2014 NFL Draft, a wild weekend to say the least, but we also want to transition to the podcast that we'll have for the rest of the season, and we actually are looking for your help. We want your submissions, and starting Wednesday, we're going to be having a contest where, hey, look, send us your submissions. What do you think the name of the podcast should be? Right now, it's just Eagles Podcast. So obviously we want a better name than that. So
it's got to be better than the Midnight Green Podcast. That's the leader in the clubhouse.
That's the working name right now.
The working name
but
is
I think
Midnight
we can
Green
do better.
Podcast.
We trust that we can do better.
Certainly. So, well, again, I'm Chris McPherson, and pleased to be with Fran Duffy. And Fran, as we look at what the Eagles did here in the 2014 NFL Draft, with all the work that you do researching and preparing, especially for our Eagles Draft Live shows, which were phenomenal over the weekend, what were some of the numbers on the guys maybe that you hadn't watched? Anything you want to throw at us in that regard?
Well, in total, there were, 256 players selected. I watched 231 of the players, so I missed on 25 guys.
That's pretty impressive.
Pretty good.
That's got to be among your best.
It was one of the best. Over the first three rounds, I watched every player. Over the first four rounds, I watched everybody for the first four rounds, I watched every player.
Okay.
I only missed three guys from the fifth round. So it really didn't get to the sixth and seventh round when I started missing guys. So
that's pretty good. Who were the fifth rounders?
The fifth rounders were
Who was the first guy that broke the streak?
Well, the first guy that broke the streak was a offensive lineman out of Purdue, which this is actually the second time in 3 years it's happened.
Yeah.
Dennis Kelly. That's right. And it was Kevin Pamphile, who I knew just because, you know, a lot of these guys that I didn't watch, I knew of. Just from talking with people and, reading people's work. And obviously I know Tony Pauline was big on this kid from Purdue. I just didn't get a chance to watch him. Obviously he can't watch everybody. So he was the first one. The first guy that got taken that I didn't know who he was, didn't know him from Adam, was Jimmy Staton from Middle Tennessee State, who went in the fifth round.
Staten Island.
Jimmy Staton went with the final pick in the fifth round. To Seattle. So,
are you in the numbers of guys you didn't watch? Are you counting specialists?
I counted the three.
I do not think you should count them.
No,
you can't be expected to watch
them.
Well,
I mean, what are you going to watch? See the stroke. I mean, you can see their numbers.
So in total, then it would be 22. 22 guys that I didn't watch.
Okay, that's amazing. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Also with us here, Bo Wolf, as always. Bo, your quick take on what the Eagles did, what you saw league wide. Any surprises from the amazing work that you did over the weekend working with the different personnel, different analysts that we had in here, especially those film pieces with Greg Cosell, which were just outstanding and truly a must-watch for anyone who wants to learn about the game, wants to know about the draft picks. Just if you're a football film junkie, just great, because not only did you break down their film, but you also showed how these guys will fit into the Eagles.
Yeah, that was fun, and thanks to Fran and the guys for putting those together. Greg did a good job. I guess my biggest surprise would be that Greg finally was able to get some sleep after complaining about his lack of sleep over the weekend.
What was it like being here with Greg Cosell for the 3 days? What are some of the behind-the-scenes things that, you know, you guys get to learn about him that not everyone else gets to see? Everyone knows, you know, he's a film junkie. He knows his stuff, you know, outstanding analyst. What are some things behind the scenes about Greg that maybe outside people don't know?
I don't know what I can say on the podcast about that, but it was fun watching him go through his big binder. Although I think he took offense when I said it was the second most impressive
nerd alert
behind Fran's spreadsheet. So I think he got a little defensive, but listen, I gotta stick with my guy.
I appreciate it. No, it was a crazy weekend. There was I'll tell you, this was one of my favorite moments of the weekend. Now, obviously, I'm over in Xfinity Studio, not over here in this studio. And during the draft, I've got a million things going on. The only way I could describe it, I would describe it to, you know, friends and family that asked me about it Sunday and Monday, was it's like spinning plates. You're just running around, like trying to, you got a million different fires you're trying to put out. You know, whether after our draft pick is, you know, is made, it's okay. Do we have B-roll on them? Do we have interviews with them? Do we have any features we can go to? Who can we get on the phone? I'm trying to find guys we can get on the phone. It's a crazy process.
How about four straight Senior Bowl guys? Thanks, Howie.
Yeah exactly. So it made it kind of easy. And you know, so we're going around. I've got a million things going on, but obviously I'm also keeping an eye on all the monitors. And the one monitor is in here, and it's late seventh round.
No, early seventh round.
Listen, I got by that point, I had no idea what round it was. It could have been the fifth round, and I
it was the top of the seventh round. Get it right.
It's the top of the seventh round, and all I hear, and obviously I'm in constant communication with all the producers, everybody that's on set, and so I can hear through comm somebody screaming. You would have thought that somebody's goldfish died, and there was a child screaming, and I look at one of the monitors, and there's Bo just. You know, like it was like he crossed the finish line at the Boston Marathon, and I said, "Michael Campanaro just got drafted."
Yep, you knew it.
Yeah,
you better believe it. Speaking of the Senior Bowl, Phil Savage, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, will be our guest on the podcast. He will analyze the Eagles' draft, those four picks, and overall his take on what the Eagles did. Phil, a notable executive for the Ravens, the Browns, and also for a short time with the Eagles before taking over the Senior Bowl and doing an outstanding job. Great, great weekend for them overall. I know there was so much hype about the underclassmen in this draft, but the Senior Bowl well representing the first round of the NFL draft. And let's get right into the Eagles picks and what they did this weekend. And we'll start right at the top. The Eagles had the number 22 pick going into the weekend. They traded down to number 26 and selected linebacker Marcus Smith out of Louisville. And I know a lot of fans were surprised because simply that he just wasn't projected by the analysts, the mock drafts, by the draft nicks to be a guy to go there. But, Fran, I'll start with you because I want to get your notes on him, what you saw of him when you studied him. He was a guy in league circles who was building a buzz that he was going to go in that time, and Howie Roseman flat out said that he was nervous that if they traded down any further, he wasn't going to be there for them.
Well, how many times over the course of the spring did somebody bring up Marcus Smith in the third round or second round, and we would sit here at this desk and say, wow, that'd be great value because Marcus Smith's a really good player. Everyone you talk to that watched his tape on this guy really, really likes him. And so that's why, you know, for months and everybody kind of kills Greg for doing this. And I'm the same way is, you know, when you're evaluating these guys and you're looking at these players in college and someone says, oh, you know, what round do you think he goes in? You know, it's kind of dangerous to kind of throw that around because what you may think, and you obviously, you know, the people in the media aren't grading for a specific team. They're grading, they're all encompassing and taking everything into account or maybe not taking everything into account. And those kind of, you know, round grades can get dangerous, and that's where, you know, it kind of sets fan expectations at a different level. But this guy's a really good player, and obviously we talked about in the past, incredibly versatile, played a number of different positions, was used in a number of different ways in coverage as a pass rusher, setting the edge, just a really fun guy to watch. And I was really happy with the pick, and I know our guest Phil Savage is a big fan of his as well.
But what's your take?
Well, first of all, speaking to the value, you know, there was the report that the Redskins were very interested in Marcus Smith at 34 overall. So they couldn't, the Eagles could not have dropped much further if Marcus was the guy they wanted. After we've heard, you know, Chip say the six guys they had earmarked at 22. Once those guys were gone, I think Marcus Smith was their guy. And I mean, you can't talk about the pick without talking about the value they got by trading down four spots, getting third round pick. So I think that was a good job working the board by Howie. And as for the player, I think we've talked about this as sort of the theme of this draft class is limiting the variables with the players. All of them are good character guys. You know what you know they're going to come here to work. And with Marcus Smith, Howie Roseman has talked about the difficulty of projecting 4-3 defensive ends to become 3-4 outside linebackers. You have no idea how they're going to do in space. Marcus Smith did a lot of that at Louisville. He's done a lot of the things already that he's going to be asked to do in this Eagles defense. There's certainly some things he needs to improve on. I think he talked about he's got to become a little bit better, a little stronger, setting the edge. But in space, he's very impressive. That was one of the things we looked at in the film room on from the Senior Bowl. I mean, at the Senior Bowl, he's being used as a Sam linebacker and as well as a pass rusher. So he can do it all, and I think it's you can see very easily the role that he's going to have in the Eagles defense.
That's what's going to be interesting to see is do the coaches carve out a role, knowing what he can do now, what he's successful at now, where he wins now, will they carve out a role that he can do that so as a rookie he can complement and add something to his football team, you know, as he develops and learns those other things, how to use his moves, how to, you know, build a wider array of pass rush moves, how to, you know, be able to set the edge better. Those things that he talked about, he wants to work on.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now he's the second best coverage outside linebacker on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously without us knowing any inside knowledge, I mean, if you're looking at what they did last year, they're going to find a role for him and, you know, and carve out a role for this guy, because that's what they did last year. They really put those players in position to succeed and put them in a place where, you know, they can do what they do best.
In the second round, the Eagles traded up and selected a wide receiver, Jordan Matthews, out of Vanderbilt. The Eagles saw that Marquise Lee had went off the board to Jacksonville. They had targeted both he and Matthews, wanted one of the two, and once Lee was off the board, wanted to make sure that they got Matthews, so they struck a deal, moving up with Tennessee to select him. And, guys, he's only the most productive receiver in SEC history, coming from a school that is not known for producing skill position players.
Yeah, and again, he's a guy where you can see where his role is. I mean, we talked about him in the pre-draft process about how many screens he caught and how good he was after the catch. That's exactly what he's going to be asked to do in this Eagles offense at times. And I like the fact that Chip said they've already got him sort of earmarked for being the slot guy. And, you know, he does make contested catches. He's got that wide catch radius. And I think it makes sense. I think some people may be surprised that they had to trade up for a receiver. But if he was one of the two guys you wanted that were the top guys on your board, absolutely, because they picked up the third. Why not spend the fourth to move up and get your guy?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a guy who's, if you're lining him up in the slot, is going to create matchup problems, because it's rare that you're going to get defenders in the slot that are going to be able to match up with a guy of his frame. So a guy who can make contested catches, a guy who's really good after the catch, you know, I think it's a really good pick, and a pick that really grew on me as time wore on, too.
Frank, you make a good point. How many or how tall are most slot corners in the NFL?
I mean, they're not going to be 6'3".
No. Third round, another wide receiver, someone whom Chip Kelly is very familiar with, Josh Huff out of Oregon. 5'11", 206 pounds. Fran, what are your notes on him, and how do you see him fitting into the Eagles' offense?
Well, just another one of those versatile weapons. I mean, a guy who I think can plug and play in this offense right away just because of his ability to play in the slot, play outside at Z, saw some time at X, played in the backfield. I mean, they moved him all around the formation at Oregon both this year and last year, and is just a guy that is good, you know, is good in all areas. So, I mean, he went down to the Senior Bowl, stood out in one-on-one, stood out in seven-on-sevens, just a guy who he's kind of built like a Jason Avant. You know, that's kind of how he's built. But obviously at this stage of his career, much more athletic, much more dynamic and explosive than Avant is at this stage. So I think obviously you get a step up there in a guy who can come in and play right away.
And because he knows the offense, he can really come in and play right away. He can do some of that out of the backfield stuff you saw DeSean Jackson do last season. I think they will find a way to get Josh Huff in space, and he can certainly take advantage of that.
Great stuff there. And I was going to, you know, echo the point about the fact that there's already a role, there's already ways that the Eagles have shown that how they're going to use Josh Huff in his offense, that they can make the transition for him in his rookie season. Fourth round, first pick of the fourth round for the second straight year, the Philadelphia Eagles own it, and they selected Jalen Watkins, the versatile defensive back out of Florida, played corner, played nickel, played safety. It looks like, guys, that he's going to be a corner to start. Howie Roseman saying that he needs to get a little bit bigger to make the transition to safety, but still, a very underrated pick, someone who was injured during the pre-draft process, probably should have gone higher than he did here at the top of the fourth round. But still, when you look at what they signed in Malcolm Jenkins, someone who's a versatile piece that can play multiple positions, it seems like they have a similar guy here with Jalen Watkins.
Yeah, I love the Jalen Watkins pick. And I think you can draw the parallel to the Brandon Boykin pick from 2 years ago, a guy who was really impressive at the Senior Bowl, had a little bit of an injury that dropped him down draft boards. Watkins had the ankle. He can do it all in the secondary. He's very versatile. He can do a little bit of return stuff, I think, as well, but I'm not sure if he's going to be asked to do that right away. I think this secondary got a lot better this offseason with Malcolm Jenkins, with depth like Nolan Carroll, Jalen Watkins. We'll talk a little bit about Ed Reynolds as well, but I think Watkins is a dynamic athlete, and I think he can really make an impact 2 years down the road.
I think one of the things you're going to see, and it'll be very, very interesting to watch, and it's actually one of the things I'm most interested to see this preseason, is last year the Eagles didn't play a lot of dime. They didn't play a lot with multiple defensive backs. They went nickel a lot, obviously, with Brandon Boykin, but it was rare that you saw them come out with six defensive backs with four corners and two safeties. They usually kept two linebackers on the field in DeMeco Ryans and Michael Kendricks. Was that a scheme thing, or was that a personnel thing? And it'll be interesting to see, now that you've got a guy like Jalen Watkins who can play in the slot opposite Boykins, You know, what now is it an opportunity now where you can play dime and you can kind of match up to those spread systems, those spread formations that some of these offenses are going to deploy.
It's a great point.
Very good point. I love the depth now in the secondary with between adding Nolan Carroll in the offseason, now getting Watkins in the mix. You have Rock Carmichael coming back with some experience. So very, very nice job there by the Eagles. Fifth round, Eagles had two picks in the fifth round. The first one, another player whom Chip Kelly is very familiar with, as is defensive line coach Jerry Azzanero. Defensive end Taylor Hart, 6'6", 281 pounds. The Eagles want a two-gap defender, Fran, and they got one here with Hart, a player whom we heard the discussion between Chip and Howie that Chip wanted to get him at the top of the fourth round, and Howie said, you know, calm down, we'll be able to get him in the fifth round. And Howie doing a good job of understanding value for certain players and where other teams' needs are and who they might be trying to get, rightfully so, gets him with the fifth round as he predicted.
I think we just sit back for a couple minutes and let Fran gush on Taylor Hart.
All right.
If they took him in the third round, I wouldn't have batted an eye. I really liked the Taylor Hart pick. I thought it was I actually celebrated very much like Bo celebrated when Campanaro went off the board, you know, in the Xfinity studio. So very, very happy with this pick. I mean, obviously he's going to come in and play as that third defensive end. Knows the system incredibly well. Started all 4 years at Oregon. Under Jerry Azzanero. Is just a guy who plays with great technique, high motor kid, has some, you know, has some athleticism. Not a great pass rusher, but a good enough pass rusher for the position. And I think he's going to come in and play in a good rotation with Sed Thornton and with Fletcher Cox. So great fit overall. I love the value, and just a great pick overall.
So how did you celebrate? Was it a fist pump? Was it some screaming in the comm box?
It was a little bit of a fist pump. We were live for NFL Network, so I was able to at least be a little bit audible. I didn't have to worry about being caught over the mics, but you know, it was definitely a great moment for sure.
Probably my favorite pick of the draft, I would say.
Second pick in the fifth round for the Eagles, safety Ed Reynolds, very prolific, a third-team All-American selection a couple of years ago. Good size, 6'1", over 207 pounds, smart player. Bo, your take on the addition of Ed Reynolds, again, another defensive back to add to the mix here.
Yeah, I think this is the only pick that sort of surprised me a little bit, only because Howie had said the stuff about not thinking that the draft was very deep at safety. I thought they would maybe take an offensive lineman here, but certainly Ed Reynolds is a guy who has a little bit of upside. He's getting me flustered. Chip knows him from Stanford. He came out a year early, and his 2013 tape was not super great, but his sophomore tape was really good. And I think there were maybe some nagging injury stuff. So, you know, Howie says that, you know, you draft guys expecting them to be starters down the road. So he's maybe one of the few safeties who was left who's got potential starting ability in his projection. For now, I think he's going to be a very good special teams player. And that's one of the other things we've seen this offseason. Special teams has been really turned around with Maragos and Brayman. And even, you know, Jalen Watkins is going to contribute there as well. So I think the Ed Reynolds pick makes sense. And I'm just glad that we've now got a lot of good competition at safety. Somebody is going to really have to earn that job opposite Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah, and obviously Ed Reynolds is one of the best tackling safeties in the draft. And has the ability to play single high as well. So a versatile guy, and obviously, as Bo alluded to, will be able to come in and play special teams and be a part of this rotation. So I think it was a good pick.
The last pick for the Eagles in the seventh round, 244th overall, Bo Allen, defensive tackle. He'll be a nose tackle in the Eagles scheme out Wisconsin. Yes, Bo, he spells his first name wrong.
Yeah, I really like the player. Really dislike the silly spelling of his first name. We're going to have to work on that with him. It's just... It's embarrassing. It's not how you spell the name Bo. But we saw Bo Allen at the Shrine game, and I think we all really liked him. We were thinking that he would not necessarily be an Eagles player because he wasn't that tall, and we were sort of in the mindset that the Eagles, if they were going to get a nose tackle, were going to look for a guy who was like 6'4 or so. But Bo Allen was really impressive at the Senior Bowl, strong at the point of attack, really, really agile and nimble for his size. I think he's going to make this roster.
Yeah, I think he, obviously you're looking at the battle there between he and Damian Square. So just a guy who's big, stout kid, but shows some surprising initial quickness. I think if he continues to get stronger, which you would imagine he's going to, getting into an NFL weight program, especially here in Philadelphia, a guy that, you know, can offer some upside down the road. So I like the Allen pick.
So it's a quick overview of what the Eagles did. Now, I think a lot of people forget that the Eagles also – acquired Darren Sproles basically in this draft using a fifth round pick sitting out to New Orleans. So when you add him to the mix here, you're getting a guy that's going to contribute very much so in his first year in Philadelphia, coming over after three seasons with the New Orleans Saints, going to be a versatile weapon for Chip Kelly's offense. I think that fact is lost on a lot of people. Staying with the running back position, the Eagles also made a big trade over the weekend, sending Bryce Brown to the Buffalo Bills and getting, now it's a complicated what they're going to get in return because it's based on a deal that the Bills did with the 49ers, sending wide receiver Stevie Johnson to them for a conditional pick, which can range from, I've got the terms here, so I'm still trying to get a grip on it. It's your fourth round pick in 2015, or a third round pick in 2016, or a fourth round pick in 2016. So to me, no worse than a fourth round draft pick for a player who just didn't really seem to fit the scheme here in Philadelphia last season.
I think it was impressive value that Howie was able to get for Bryce Brown. I mean, I like Bryce Brown. He's certainly got lots of physical tools. He's got as impressive straight line speed as any running back in the league. But I don't know what his role was going to be here. And to get at worst a fourth round pick, I think is outstanding value.
You spent a seventh rounder 2 years ago and you flip that into a fourth or possibly a third round pick. I mean, that's incredible value. So a great trade overall.
All right. So I want to ask you guys, you guys obviously have watched and studied these guys throughout the draft process. You've seen them at the Shrine Game, the Senior Bowl. I mean, you guys know them inside and out, but do you really know who these guys are?
I guess we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. We're going to find out in our game that we call They Are Who We Thought They Were.
They are who we thought they were.
All right. So first question or first player here we'll profile, and I'll stick to the draft picks. I won't go to the undrafted guys, so we'll talk about them in a little bit. I know. We could go in depth here, but let's see. First and foremost, father is the same name. He earned his degree in communications over the weekend.
Marcus Smith.
Very good. My last clue is going to be he was a high school. Ooh, that's a little sharp sounding there. But still, yes, Marcus Smith, the last thing it was going to be a high school quarterback. So purely coincidental that the last two first round picks, Lane Johnson being in 2013, were once high school quarterbacks. But nonetheless, Marcus Smith there. Yes, that is your first person. Congratulations there, Bo.
Thank you.
Second one here. His grandfather was a prolific swimmer. He won a state lacrosse title in high school.
Bo Allen.
Very good. Wow. Two for two.
I saw the swimming note.
You saw the swimming note.
Yeah.
In the bio.
Because in the bio it says his grandfather was a 6-time All-American.
Yes.
Swimmer. So at first I was like, what?
How can you be that?
6-time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Different events, I guess.
Also great fashion sense. That pictures of him on Twitter with the American flag shirt. It's gonna be. I can't wait to meet him here.
Man knows his way around a wardrobe.
Certainly that's the case. Third player went to the same high school as safety Nate Allen. Allen's mom was actually his
Jalen Watkins.
Yeah, very good. Right. Very good. Depending on how in-depth you've been following the coverage.
You finished the note for people who didn't watch Draft Live.
Allen's mom was actually Jalen Watkins' 10th grade home economics teacher. And I believe it was Nate Allen's dad worked with Jalen's grandfather at Cape Coral High School there in Florida.
We also had a guy call in whose uncle, or no, Chad Honey's uncle was his gym teacher.
Really?
Do you remember that?
We attracted all kinds of callers this weekend. So yes, that is true.
The other note I was going to have was his brother. It was a first round pick of the Buffalo Bills, Sammy Watkins. So Jalen Watkins there, the Eagles' new defensive back. And last player here, his father played in the NFL for 10 seasons as a linebacker.
Ed Reynolds.
Yeah. Pretty.
3-1.
Father was a linebacker for the New England Patriots and the New York Giants. The other note I had was that Ed Reynolds talked about the time that when he was a kid, he visited the NovaCare Complex. It was during the 2004 season because his father had worked in the league office and was coming down to make a visit to Philly. So he tagged along and got to meet Andy Reid and Donovan McNabb. Of course, 2004, the year the Eagles went to the Super Bowl. The other note I had is he says school record at Stanford returning 3 interceptions for touchdowns 2 seasons ago when he was named a third team All-American selection. So as we not just look at the Eagles, but what the rest of the NFC East did here in the 2014 NFL draft, might as well start with the Dallas Cowboys. And I don't know what the feeling was for you guys, but I was in Radio City Music Hall on Thursday night. Dallas Cowboys came on the clock with a 16th overall pick. Johnny Manziel is sitting in the green room and I'm sitting there like, they're going to pick him. I'm thinking, like, is this really going to happen? And there was all the smoke about Jerry Jones had him as the number one rated quarterback and, or even number one rated player, I think, were some of the reports. And Tony Romo was getting up there in age. He's coming off the back surgery.
Brandon Whedon's getting up there in age.
I had to throw that in there.
Already up there in age.
it just seemed like it was a fit. If he's the number one guy on your board, it goes back to what they did last year when they had Sharif Floyd as was a top five player on their board, and they ended up passing on him. So I just thought, you know what? It seemed like the perfect fit. You keep Johnny Football in Texas. And they made, actually, I thought a very smart pick, taking Zach Martin from Notre Dame, a versatile lineman who could start in at guard as day one or challenge Doug Free for the right tackle position.
I thought it was interesting. They announced him as a guard for the Cowboys, so it sounds like that's where they're gonna play him. So it's back-to-back first-round picks on the interior line, which is maybe not the best value, but Zach Martin's a good player.
Zach Martin's a really good player. So obviously a guy who, like Chris alluded to, can play right tackle. Obviously probably best fit is at guard. So their offensive line the past 2 years has gotten a lot better.
They also had 5 seventh-round picks. They could unload a couple of those. They needed to take off. I mean, 3 of them were compensatory picks. But and then when they took DeMarcus Lawrence in the second round, they gave up a 3rd-round pick to move up to with the Redskins. The Eagles only had to give up a 4th-round pick to move up in the 2nd round. DeMarcus Lawrence is talented. I don't know necessarily if – I mean, they know better than I do, but it doesn't seem like he's the best fit for that defense.
They need help on that line, though.
Well, certainly.
They need help on that
line. But I don't
know.
And he's been suspended. He's been suspended 3 times, too, so there's that. They got to factor in. I thought it was interesting that they made the trade with the Redskins. But
yeah,
obviously we've seen the interdivisional trades before.
Maybe they were just lazy, DeMarcus to DeMarcus.
It's easy.
Other notable picks, Devin Street, Pittsburgh wide receiver, solid pick there. Ahmad Dixon, safety, and former Oregon corner Terrence Mitchell, all some of their later round picks. Overall, they had 9 players. Again, like Bo said, 5 in the 7th round. But again, focusing on the lines of scrimmage, again, Zach Martin and DeMarcus Lawrence in there to try to help that team for next season. New York Giants had 7 picks, and I think Eagles fans were probably pretty disappointed when they made their first round selection at number 12 overall, taking Odell Beckham.
It's just taking on a whole new meaning now, though.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that he's in the division so he can still get this drop in.
Yes, exactly. Odell Beckham, speedster out of LSU, going in the first round, number 12.
Apparently, the Giants like their receivers raw.
And they liked them from LSU because they took Reuben Randall a couple years ago. But I was glad that they took ODB over Aaron Donald. I was scared that Aaron Donald was going
to I totally agree.
That would have been something to deal with.
But still, that wide receiver core, now with Victor Cruz, looking a lot better than it had. Eli Manning, though, you still got – I was wondering, you're talking about what could have been – which team could have been that surprise first-round team to take a quarterback? Because, if you were an Eagles fan going into this draft, you were hoping and wishing and praying that all these teams were going to take quarterbacks, that Johnny Football would be gone, that Teddy Bridgewater would have been gone. Bortles, obviously, had went. You were hoping Derek Carr might be off the board. Just push those other players to the Eagles. The Eagles don't need a quarterback, so push those other position players down and see what the Eagles might end up with there at 22. Nonetheless, though, I thought maybe there was an outside shot. No one talked about the Giants as a quarterback-needy team. How much does Eli Manning have? He's coming off ankle surgery in the offseason, coming off the 27 interceptions. I was wondering if they might be a surprise team in the mix there.
Problem is, I think it's Tom Coughlin's last ride, and so he doesn't want to wait around.
Yeah.
I would agree. I mean, I would have been very, very surprised if they went the quarterback route.
In the 2nd round, they got Weston Richburg. So he's a guy who could come in, start center for them. And then also Boston College running back Andre Williams they picked up later on in the draft. So overall, 7 players, but a couple guys who can provide some immediate impact, though.
Jay Bromley, a guy we saw at the Shrine Game. They took in the 3rd round defensive tackle from Syracuse. I mean, Andre Williams could end up being there starter by midseason. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Rashad Jennings there now. So you've got Rashad Jennings, Andre Williams, and then you've got David Wilson, who's really the wild card at this point. So I don't know how much longer he'll be in the doghouse. Obviously, he's had some ball security issues.
And injury.
Obviously. The spine as well. Yeah. So, he's the wild card there, but as a former first-round pick. But, in that role, I think Andre Williams is probably a good pick.
And the Washington Redskins, they didn't have a first-round pick because of their deal with RG3 to the St. Louis Rams a couple of years ago. Their first pick, outside linebacker Trent Murphy out of Stanford. And then in the 3rd round, they got Virginia tackle Morgan Moses to highlight the top of their draft board. Fran, your take on what the Redskins...
And Spencer Long in the 3rd round. So yes. They really addressed the offensive line, which is what they needed to do.
No question. They needed some help along the O-line. And I think Moses is a big kid, great wingspan, and obviously it'll give them an option there, a right tackle, which I think is an area that they wanted to address going in. you know, with the first or with their first pick, Trent Murphy.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a great player. A lot of his sacks, and we talked about him with Greg Cosell in the past, that he, you know, he watched all of his sacks and obviously had a high sack total this past year. You know, not many of them were situations where he necessarily won with athleticism. It was a lot of, you know, scheme and, you know, high motor tendencies that kind of led to those sacks. Not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, with a second round pick, rather, you know, you question the value there.
I thought their fourth round pick, Bashaud Breeland, for the corner from Clemson, is going to be interesting because their secondary still is not very good. So if he can come in and make an impact, that'll be important for them.
What did you guys think of last year's Seastrunk as one of their late round picks?
You know, in that system,
Lake, is that right? Lake Seastrunk.
Is it
in that system? I think it'll be interesting because obviously you've got Jay Gruden coming over from Cincinnati, and one of the guys that I think you can compare a Lake Seastrunk to is a Gio Bernard. And obviously, he worked with Gio Bernard in Cincinnati last year. And will he see him in that light and use Alfred Morris and Lake Seastrunk in that manner? He used Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Gio Bernard last year. That would be interesting because I think that's Seastrunk's best role is in that kind of spread look where it's, you know, 11 personnel and the field is wide open and he can kind of have a, you know, defined running lane. So it'll be interesting to see how he's used.
Going back to Trent Murphy and his sacks for a second, when you watch Marcus Smith, what were his sacks in comparison? 14.5 as a senior, second in the nation. What did you see when he was getting after the quarterback?
I thought for a guy who'd only played the position for a couple of years that he was actually pretty polished as a pass rusher, you know, considering, obviously. A guy who used a lot of different pass rush moves. I know I can go to my notes here. Let's see. Used the hand swipe, the spin, the swim, speed, bull, is able to go from speed to power, has a good motor. So obviously he was able to get sacks in lots of different ways, and he was really good on stunts and blitzes as well. A really fluid mover. So a guy who was able to get after the quarterback in a number of different ways. And obviously, like we talked about with Deion Jordan last year, keep in mind that Marcus Smith had 13.5 sacks, right, and 18.5 TFLs, and had to drop into coverage for half the time. So great production, even considering the fact that he was constantly playing in coverage.
All right, looking around the league, Bo, I think you had some awards.
Yeah, I got some awards.
Just you want to
some
give
personal
out?
Personal opinions.
Are you tossing bouquets or criticisms? Which is it going to be?
Little, well, just some interesting things.
Okay.
I give the Andy Reid Noodle Arm Award to the pick of Aaron Murray in the fifth round. The good news for Aaron Murray is it's the only team he could come in where he's got a stronger arm than the starting quarterback. I thought the Chiefs draft was interesting. They took a lot of guys we talked about. D'Anthony Thomas in the fourth. Our guy LDT in the sixth.
Say it, come on.
Laurent Duvernay tardif. D Ford in the first. Interesting. always good to see how Andy is addressing the draft board. Obviously, the best pick of the draft, the Ravens getting value at 218 from Michael Campanaro. Probably a top five guy on your board to get him at 218. I mean, they traded up. They saw the value surplus. So that was a good pick.
Will you go down to Baltimore to see games?
I guess I'm gonna have to.
Yeah.
Don't we have a preseason game with the Ravens? No.
Not this year.
Not this year.
Chicago, Pittsburgh.
Guess not. I'll wait for the Pro Bowl then.
No. Do you have his T-shirt on underneath?
I do not.
Okay.
My favorite, we talked about this on the draft show, how, you know, it's easy to like a team's draft if they have two first round picks, but my favorite, I broke down my favorite team's drafts into, day one and two and then day three.
Okay.
Day one and two, I love the Rams draft. Greg Robinson, Aaron Donald, LaMarcus Joyner in the second, Trey Mason in the third. I think that's great value.
Stellar.
It's very clear that they want to run the ball and, you know, try and compete with those teams in that division. So you get a guy like Greg Robinson and Trey Mason. I think Trey Mason could be their bell cow this year.
So definitely think so.
It'll be interesting to watch them play.
And Aaron Donald on that defensive line is insane.
Four first-round picks now.
Yeah. And then I loved what the Steelers did on day three. First couple days, they took Shazier, Stephon Tuitt, and Dre Archer. Third day, Martavis Bryant. Fifth round, our guy Shaq Richardson. Love him. Wesley Johnson from Vanderbilt, the offensive lineman. Jordan Zumwalt, who you love, and Dan Klausner loves as well. Daniel McCullers, who, I mean, certainly has question marks, but in the sixth round, that's a pretty good value.
Yep.
And then your boy, Rob Blanchflower, in the seventh round.
Yeah, it's a good group.
It's pretty deep.
Yeah.
Fran, who are some of the players who you're surprised that went earlier or maybe later than expected? The only reason I asked that is Jordan Zumwalt came to mind when he mentioned him. So I know he was a player that we talked about a lot on the podcast. Who are some of those players that you're a little bit surprised
well,
by?
Well, I'll tell you what. I actually have a list of some guys I was surprised went undrafted.
Okay.
You know, one of them is the guy who ended up here, and that's Trey Burton, a really versatile offensive weapon who played a number of different positions for the Gators and will play a tight end, it looks like, in the NFL, and I thought that was probably his best position at the next level. But a guy who obviously is not the biggest kid. He's 6'2 or so in that area, but runs really well, runs really good routes, has good hands, high character guy. I really liked Trey Burton. Craig Lawson, the safety out of LSU, I was very surprised to see him fall. Dustin Vaughn from West Texas A&M, he's a big, strong-arm kid, obviously out of a small school, but I was surprised that he didn't get drafted.
You and Cosell and Bo have talked about him.
Yeah, I thought that someone would take a flyer on him. Marcus Roberson, the corner out of Florida, I know that he and Lucius Purifoy have had some issues and obviously were inconsistent last year, but I was surprised no one kind of took a late-round flyer on him. Shelton Quarles, the D-lineman from South Carolina. And
they call it USC there.
Yeah, they call it. Yeah. They call it SC. Maybe it was USC. But Brandon Coleman, the receiver out of Rutgers. You know, big kid that can run a little bit. Obviously was not the most athletic kid, but he can run a straight line.
He had a knee injury last year.
Yep, exactly.
Through, correct.
So there were some issues there. Christian Jones, the linebacker out of Florida State. I think he had failed drug tests at the combine, but obviously played a number of different positions, a number of different roles for Florida State. And then my guy. One of the most obscure players I watched was Howard Jones out of Shepherd, the DN linebacker.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about him.
Really explosive kid.
Where'd he end up?
You know what? I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know where he ended up, but I was very surprised to see him undrafted. The guy who I was comparable and was also comparably, relatively unknown was Zach Moore out of Concordia, St. Paul.
Everybody knows Zach comparison.
Right, so he went in the sixth round. So, those were the guys I was pretty surprised to see fall.
Where did Nikita Whitlock end up?
I don't know.
He's in Cincinnati, I think.
Cincinnati,
there you go.
Yeah.
Do you know what position he went?
I don't know. I think they might have listed him as a fullback.
Yeah. Right,
in a second, you should read us your notes on the other undrafted guys you watched for the Eagles. But I'll give you my two other awards. The Misconnection Award, the team, the pairing of player and team that I was most hoping for that did not happen, was linebacker Andrew Jackson to the Washington Redskins.
bringing Andrew Jackson back to the Capitol.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Very nice.
And then finally, the Trey Dillon Memorial Award. Trey Dillon, former ETN shooter, producer, now works for the San Francisco 49ers, goes to the Carolina Panthers, who in the third round took Trey Turner and in the fourth round took Trey Boston. Two different spellings of Trey. None of them the same as Trey Dillon. So.
Very nice. The Eagles
good work by Sean McDermott.
The Eagles adding 15 undrafted free agents, or filling the roster out to the maximum limit of 90. Fran, you mentioned Trey Burton already. Any other notable stand-up for you? Any guys that you studied here?
Yeah, I watched the tackle from USC, Kevin Graff.
Was an athletic guy.
We saw him at the Shrine game, and then I watched him a little bit leading up to it as well. An athletic kid, a big kid, obviously, 6'6", 6'7", somewhere in that range. A big kid who can move a little bit. So I was intrigued to see him here. Let's see. Henry Josie, the running back out of Mizzou, was another guy who I liked. Obviously had a devastating knee injury at the end of 2011, missed all of 2012, but came back and was a force there for Mizzou and was one of the big reasons why they went to the SEC title game. There were some other guys here.
Daytuan Lowe.
It was a versatile safety from Oklahoma State and was able to play in the slot, play deep, play in the box. So just one of those versatile guys, and I think he's a good value there if you're going to bring him in and kind of bring him in and see if he can contribute there.
And then Flewellen.
David Flewellen was a big back. We saw him at the Senior Bowl. Was very productive in the MAC and was a guy that obviously had a lot of production there. So a lot of intriguing names. And there were guys that we brought in that I knew of that I didn't watch that I'm excited to see once we get mini camps rolling.
I'm excited to see what Frank Mays looks like, 6'9". see if he and Alejandro can battle it out for the Big Human Being Award.
Our special guest on the final edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA is none other than the executive director of the Senior Bowl and a former personnel executive with a number of teams, the Ravens, the Browns, and the Philadelphia Eagles, the one and only Phil Savage. Phil, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast, and congratulations to you as the person running the Senior Bowl, an outstanding weekend overall for the Senior Bowl prospects, including the first four selections of the Philadelphia Eagles, were players who were highlighted at the Senior Bowl.
Well, thank you. We were quite pleased with the way everything unfolded and very happy and proud for the 84 players that were selected. And, you know, the other 20 or so that remained that ended up being signed as undrafted free agents. So in thinking that 102 juniors declared for the draft and the idea that that was going to impact this class in a big way, we ended up with 7 first-rounders and 37 players in the first day, or the first 3 rounds. I always still call it first day, and then ultimately 84 overall. So we were quite pleased with the way it went.
Knowing that there were so many underclassmen in this year's draft, did you want to highlight the platform that the Senior Bowl is for the prospects this year, knowing that it was already a very good senior class to begin with, but you wanted to give them that extra attention to make sure that they caught the eyes of the scouts and the general managers around the league?
Well, and yes, and I think when you really go back and analyze it, I went back and did a little bit of research after the draft. You know, 6 of our 7 quarterbacks were drafted. 18 of our 21 offensive linemen were drafted, both, you know, north and south. 11 of our 13 corners were selected, and then it was 16 out of 18 defensive linemen. And I think when you look at those numbers, what it tells me is that the teams really value those one-on-one offensive line, defensive line, pass protection, pass rush periods. They put tremendous stock in that. That might be the most important picture that the players have in terms of either being a pass blocker or a pass rusher. And then the quarterback part of it, where they're in the meetings with the coaches, trying to learn a pro-style approach to offense, that interaction with the coaches is just, you know, invaluable. And then when you talk about cornerback play, you know, you can spend the whole fall going to the colleges and watching games and on video, but you may never see a corner in press coverage, or you may never see a corner in off coverage. They may be a zone team at their particular college. And so the one-on-ones for the cornerbacks are so important. And I think those numbers at those 4 positions or position groups really bear out the importance of the Reese's Senior Bowl.
Phil, and I think the amount of players that were selected from the game is really just a testament to you and your staff, obviously, because when you got there, you really wanted to organize this event almost like an NFL team, and you guys let out a watch list and you watch tape and all these guys. Can you just explain to the fans out there what that process is like and how that starts?
Yeah, we try to put together our list of potential candidates over the summer just like an NFL team would. You know, we don't have the number of people. We don't have the staff size to get as detailed as an NFL team can. But we pride ourselves on being kind of the 33rd NFL franchise from a scouting standpoint. And the beautiful thing is we get to do all this, and we don't have to play a game. So we're never judged on wins and losses. But, yeah, we start with 400 names or so in August and whittle it down. I think this year between myself and our other staff members, we got a chance to see over 200 of those players in person and ultimately invited 110 of what we thought was the very best that the nation had to offer. Now, you know, the thing that people forget is that we missed out on 9 players this year that had that opted just to bypass the game completely, and another 20 that we would have had in the game had they not sustained an injury at the end of the year, just felt like they were not 100% healthy. So, you know, considering that we lost almost 30 players plus all those juniors coming out, we thought we were able to collect a good number of prospects that obviously ended up being drafted. But, you know, we have to make our picks November 1st, you know, December 1st, and that is quite early in comparison to when teams get all the medical reports, they get a chance to do the interviewing, they get the measurables at the combine. So for us to have 84 players selected this year, 94 a year ago, we think we're doing a good job in terms of evaluating what is actually out there in terms of this pool for each draft class.
So, Phil, we want to talk a little bit about the guys from the Senior Bowl who ended up on this Eagles team, and it started in the first round with Marcus Smith. And I think you had said before the draft that you were hearing that he might go in the first round. And one of the things that stood out to us watching the Senior Bowl tape on Marcus Smith was that he was used in such a versatile way. He was used as a stand-up linebacker and as a pass rusher throughout the week. What was it about him that you think made him a good fit for this Eagles team, and how impressed were you by his versatility?
Well, I'll tell you, back during the fall when we were vetting Marcus Smith for the Senior Bowl game, a number of scouts told me that they felt like that he would go higher than Teddy Bridgewater, that he had a chance to be a first-rounder, and that they felt like Teddy was a late one or an early two, and that's exactly the way it played out. You know, they played him primarily as a defensive end at Louisville. They would stand him up and move him around at different times in some of their situational packages, but I think he's an ideal fit for Chip Kelly as a Chip Kelly prospect. You know, he's smart, he's got excellent intangibles, and you know that he's versatile. He can play on his feet, he can put his hand in the ground and rush off the edge. I thought he had an okay week at the Senior Bowl. I had actually touted him heavily that I thought he would really jump onto the big stage, but he was just okay there. But I think that was really his first exposure to playing as a 3-4 outside backer. He improved tremendously at the combine and then in the individual pro days, and obviously to the point where the Eagles felt good enough about him to take him at 26. But I think he'll definitely be a good player for Philly, and I think it's a very solid choice and one of those under-the-radar first-rounders that probably did not get much attention nationally, but he'll be a solid player in Philly.
Phil, what type of player does he project to down the road if he can reach that potential?
Well, I think, you know, to me, his floor would be a solid starter that would be able to play on all three downs. You know, he'll line up over the tight end, perhaps as a Sam linebacker on first down, and then as the Eagles go to their nickel and dime packages, he would shift and play a defensive end spot and be able to rush the quarterback. I think that probably ends up being the floor for Marcus Smith. Now, can he get to a level where he's reaching 10, 12, 14 sacks a year? I don't know that. I mean, it's a tough transition when you're now going against professional linemen. Only time will tell, but, you know, he certainly has great potential.
So, Phil, in the second round, the Eagles selected Jordan Matthews, and I know he was a guy that his name was buzzing early before the Senior Bowl because of him asking for extra tape from you guys. Can you just tell that story to the fans, and obviously what kind of player is Jordan?
Yeah, about 2 weeks before the draft, I get a call from Jordan Matthews wanting to know which corners were going to be in the game and if I had any extra tape that I could send to him. So I actually sent him one DVD I had extra, and that just showed the kind of preparation and the interest that he had in terms of really putting his best foot forward. But during the week, you know, on Tuesday or Wednesday morning, I want to say it was maybe Tuesday morning, I get a call from him at 5:55 a.m. And I look over, I see my phone. I mean, obviously, I'm not awake yet. And I said, oh, no, my A-plus student is getting ready to bail out on the game. And that's what crosses my mind. And he says, Mr. Savage, he said, a group of us are down here trying to watch extra tape. Can you get somebody down here to let us in? The doors are locked. And, you know, for him to take the initiative to go get an extra 2 hours worth of film in from 6 to 7:30 or 6 to 8, I think really shows what kind of approach he's going to bring to the table. I think when the offensive coaches say that we want you to run this route at 11 and three-quarters yards, not that that's a realistic request, he's going to be at 11 and three-quarter yards. He's going to do exactly what he's told to do. The most prolific receiver in SEC history, 262 career catches, and they really didn't have great quarterback play at Vanderbilt, and everybody in the league knew that the ball was going to him. So, you know, there's a lot of really good things about Jordan Matthews, and I think in this system he can find very good success with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Phil, how do you think he projects as an inside receiver? Chip Kelly said that he'll start out in the slot. How do you think he'll project working in the middle of the field early on?
Well, he's got some experience doing that at Vandy, and, you know, he's a bit of a matchup issue because of his size, almost 6'3", you know, 215 pounds. And, you know, again, the work ethic, you know, he's the cousin of Jerry Rice. I believe it's the cousin or nephew. I can't remember the exact family tie, but, you know, obviously there's a tremendous passion with him. And, you know, operating from the slot, he's got some savviness to him in terms of his ability to change directions, even though he's a bigger-bodied wide receiver. And, you know, between he and Josh Huff, and I'll go ahead and just jump to him, you know, Josh was in the game, and I thought he had a very impressive week of practice. As a matter of fact, when I wrote up the receivers on our website, I put him number one, even though he ended up not playing in the game because he had a slight hamstring pull, I believe is what it was. But nevertheless, I think between Huff and Matthews and Jeremy Maclin and Riley Cooper, you now have four receivers that will be where they are supposed to be. And I think that Nick Foles will take great comfort in being able to depend on these four players to be in the right spots.
Phil, in the fourth round, the Eagles took Jalen Watkins at the top of the round, and we were sort of looking at it through a prism similar to Brandon Boykin a couple years ago. And you were here when the Eagles took Brandon Boykin, and both he and Watkins were very talented athletically. Were a little bit nicked up in the run up to the draft process, so they dropped a little bit. And we're wondering if you see him similarly to Boykin at all.
Well, there's no question that this league requires 5 and 6 defensive backs to be on the field now. And, you know, Brandon Boykin's turned into a nice player for Philly. I really like Jalen Watkins. I thought he was a sleeper all the way since I saw him back in August. You know, of course, at Florida, they had what was expected to be two higher-rated corners, Luchez Purifoy and Marcus Roberson. And they played them at corner, and Jalen actually took more reps at safety and nickel. But then as this process unfolded and those two juniors declared, Jalen actually outran both of them at the combine. He's the half-brother of Sammy Watkins. He comes to the Reese's Senior Bowl, and to tell you the truth, I really thought from a technique standpoint, he was very sound in terms of his ability to press, his ability to stay square to the line of scrimmage and react to the football. I think this is a really nice pick, especially in this era of football that we're living in right now where the ball is going to be in the air and you can never have enough corners. And he brings such great versatility as a corner, a nickel, and potentially even as a safety.
Phil, you alluded to the list of about 20 players earlier in this interview that missed the Senior Bowl due to injury, and one of those guys was Taylor Hart. Can you just talk about Hart and what he brings to the table?
Yeah, Taylor was really upset. He called me 2 days before reporting date as he was making his way out of the doctor's office, informing us that he had a foot fracture and would not be able to participate in the game. And, you know, he was really looking forward to it, and unfortunately he missed it. But, you know, he's a classic 3-4-5 technique, a defensive end. He's a meat and potatoes type of guy. And, you know, that was one of the real trends in this draft, I thought, is that some of those anchor-type nose tackles and five technique ends really slid in this draft. You look at Lewis Nix III from Notre Dame, a pure nose. Some people had him in the first round. He goes in the third round. You look at Stephon Tuitt, his teammate at Notre Dame. He slides into the second round. Brent Urban, big five technique from the University of Virginia. He goes in the fourth round, and then Taylor ends up at the Philadelphia Eagles. I believe it was in the fifth round. So, you know, those kinds of players that may not necessarily be the pass-rushing types but can play against the run, those kind of players slipped in the draft, but I think Taylor Hart can certainly be a rotational defensive lineman in their scheme.
Phil, the Eagles announced their signing, their undrafted rookie free agent signings, and there's one guy on there who was a Senior Bowl, so we'll ask you about him as well. David Fluellen, the running back from Toledo, what was it that made him an interesting prospect for you?
Well, you know, David was having a very good year at Toledo and suffered an injury, missed the back half of the season in 2013, reached out to his agent and said, you know, where is he health-wise? And he said, he's good to go. He just has not been tested on a football field. So we brought David into the game, and I thought he stood up quite well, seemed to get better and improve as the week went on. But this was someone that showed up in late January that had not been on a football field since October, and I think, you know, a lot of times we judge players for what we see that day without really considering what the background is. But he's a bigger back, a downhill runner. He will bring a physical presence between the tackles. And, you know, in this era of backfields by committee, we'll see if he has enough to stick around in Philly or end up making it somewhere else.
All right, Phil, how much longer will we wait before we jump into the tape for 2015? How long until your watch list comes out?
Well, I've got one of my staff assistants that, you know, is a scout in training. He's already kind of putting the list together in terms of preliminarily, but, you know, I've already started thinking about the quarterbacks for next year because I can tell you guys this past you know, a year ago, I could have named off 12 or 14 quarterbacks that we would have an interest in. And right now, I bet I couldn't name five or six. I mean, this quarterback class is for next year, from a senior standpoint, is certainly not going to be what we saw in 2013. So, you know, that's going to be something that we'll have to work through. Marcus Mariota from Oregon and Brett Hundley from UCLA are technically not seniors. They're going to be fourth-year juniors. So I'm going to push their coaches to see if they can get graduated by December so that they can make their way to Mobile here over the summer. So the campaign definitely begins now, and we will have our watch list out sometime in August. And for your listeners, if you know, we'd love a follow at Senior Bowl Phil, or you know, go to our website. We had some nice features on there this year on a weekly basis throughout the season, and then of course in the spring as we ran up to the draft.
Phil, I have one more question for you if you'll humor me. I'm a Wake Forest guy. How long will we be waiting for Michael Campanera to go to the Pro Bowl in Baltimore?
You know, I really like Mike Campanero, and he's another one of the players that I thought would, his value would be in the third day of the draft, and he could end up making a significant impact. You know, slot receivers, going back into the 90s and the early 2000s, they just weren't picked. Wayne Corbett to the Jets, Wes Welker to the Chargers initially, coming out of Texas Tech. But with the way the game is played now, the slot is a legitimate position. And so we saw a number of them get drafted as early as the second, third, fourth rounds. And I thought the Ravens picked up a really good player, Mike Campanero. He's all-time leading receiver in Wake history. He's got quickness. He ran faster than people expected. If he can stay healthy, I think he'll have a chance.
Thank you, Phil.
Phil, you made Bo's day. Thank you very much for that. More than anything else here. Phil Savage, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, and was also a key contributor to our Scouts Notebook series. Phil, just take us, before we let you go here, what was it like being able to educate fans about the ins and outs, the nuances of what the player personnel executives are looking for in these prospects through the series?
Well, it was a lot of fun. Of course, we did it when you guys were down at the Reese's Senior Bowl in Mobile. And you know, I think that the hardcore fans, the ones that want to go next level, so to speak, in terms of really learning about scouting, could definitely get a ton out of that series. I watched every one of them as you guys released them. And, you know, I enjoyed hearing some of the other people talk and, you know, educate me further in terms of trying to advance and be better in terms of what is going on in the NFL right now and trying to transfer these players from college to pro. You know, it's just two totally different games. Although a lot of the elements of the spread offense from college have trickled up into the NFL, and you guys are living right in the middle of it, being with Chip Kelly and the Eagles right now.
Phil Savage, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, congratulations once again for all the success that the Senior Bowl had, not just back in February during the game itself, but during the draft this past weekend. And I guess the message to everyone out there is, don't skip the Senior Bowl. Is that what you want to basically tell everyone out there?
Yeah, don't forget about us. And the one request I have is maybe Merrill Reese can do a spot or two for us this next year.
Okay.
For the Reese's Senior Bowl.
Reese's,
how about
yeah.
That?
You
I
got
like
it.
That.
You got to get that connection together. We'll work on making that happen, Phil. We'll definitely work on making that happen. I don't think that'll be a problem.
We'll get him some minis or a giant peanut butter cut. We don't have to be any money involved, but we'll get him some candy.
What about Reese Witherspoon?
Sweet home Alabama.
There you
that
go.
Might work too.
There we go.
I like that.
That one's for free.
There's an off-season project while I'm not watching any tape.
There you go.
But when you're not watching tape, that's the problem, though. You got to get one of those junior scouts on this. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Phil,
hey
Sam,
guys, thanks a lot.
Phil,
I appreciate it.
Phil, thanks, thank you very much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA. Some great, great insight there from Phil, who again was going through the process of evaluating these players, you know, before the college football season began. And he makes a great point that he has to come out with basically, you know, his top 100 list before the college football season even ends, and has to project these guys and look at all the guys who got selected. He went position by position of all the guys who basically went to the Senior Bowl and ended up getting drafted. So I think it's a phenomenal job by Phil and his great group of guys down there in Mobile.
Unbelievable event, and it's been that way since he took over. So I really look forward to that event every year. And then obviously, I mean, one of the things you noticed this year, there were a few of those guys that passed up on the opportunity to play and some of them didn't get drafted. So it's obviously it's an opportunity for those guys to showcase their talents to NFL scouts.
So that's going to do it for this edition of the Journey to the Draft
Is this
podcast.
The final edition of the...
I guess it's not truly the final edition because obviously Wednesday we're kicking off our contest, so we want to get submissions from the fans before we decide the name. So I think we might push the Journey to the Draft podcast name for one more week.
We hope to be announcing the name on the podcast.
That's what
next
we'll
week.
Do, yes. So,
sure you think of some ideas.
Do we just go into next week as the unnamed podcast?
Maybe the question mark.
Yeah,
but for now, do what you want with our potty.
That is definitely correct. That's Bo Wolf for Fran Duffy. I'm Chris McPherson. Thank you very much for following us and listening to us and watching us all draft season here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.